Hey guys, it's Mina. Welcome back. On this episode, Field Yates and I are going to be talking about the QB carousel. Please take a minute to subscribe to the show so you don't miss any new episodes. If you don't already, rate it, 5 stars please, and leave a review. Remember that my mom reads them all. Before we get to today's show, I want to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, That's What She Said, with Sarah Spain. On this week's episode, Sarah talks with ESPN investigative reporters John Barr and Dan Murphy about their new book, Start By Believing, which chronicles the failures at every level to report and properly investigate the sexual abuse crimes committed by Larry Nassar. It's truly a great book. You can find That's What She Said wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome back to the Mina Kimes Show, featuring Lenny. The only NFL podcast where one of the hosts thinks being a free agent means running around without his leash. Before we get to the subject of today's episode, the quarterback carousel, we've got some breaking NFL news, Field Yates. I don't know if you saw this. I know I'm a little more on top of news than you. So did you see the massive news that came across just now?
Just scrolling through Twitter, Mina. I am just deciphering what could possibly register on your radar. I have no idea. Just fill me in. I am without an answer at the moment.
Younghoe Koo just signed a 1-year extension.
Whoa.
Ba-ba-bam!
Let's go!
I'm so bad at the ba-ba-bam sound effect.
So, I would say, ba-bam, objectively, that he is the most dynamic kicker in the NFL. We saw him last year. Think about the things he accomplished, Mina. Besides sort of finding a home in Atlanta.
Breaking barriers.
That's right. He nailed back-to-back, I guess successfully converted, back-to-back onside kicks on Thanksgiving, nonetheless. Like, that was awesome.
Great moment.
That
great
was
moment.
For me to be thankful for, as I was tryptophaning. That was the East Coast 8 p.m. game. So I was a little tired at the end of that Saints and Falcons game. Back-to-back onside kicks.
Right back.
Yeah, all the way back. Ugh. And he also recovered a fumble last year.
Yes, he did. Truly a kicker who does it all. Only reaffirms that the Falcons are my East Coast team. You know, listeners to this podcast know I've been an irrational Matt Ryan defender for like 5 years at least.
Is it possible to be an irrational Matt Ryan defender?
No, that's a great point. It shouldn't be. But I've felt for years like he was underappreciated, ignored, cast aside. So anyways, I'm doubling down now on the Falcons. Field, the Falcons are not on the list of teams you and I came up with who have uncertain, dubious, interesting quarterback situations. So I thought we're going to kind of look at this from a team perspective. But before we get into that, I'm just going to rattle off the teams. Are you ready?
I am, and just to be clear to those out there listening, when you say that you and I collaborated to collect this list, what happened was I was literally, I was just about to turn on my car on the drive down from Boston to Bristol last night, and you sent me a list of teams, and my first blush thought was, all those look good. Mina's smart. She knows football as well as anybody, so I'm going to trust her instincts. So I take no credit for this list that was expertly created by you.
Field's not responsible for any mistakes. Although, the Saints are off the board. So the other big piece of news, lesser to me than Younghoe Koo, was that Drew Brees announced he's coming back, folks. Weirdly, there's no financial news associated with it. So.
Right. He actually is the rare quarterback who releases leverage this time of year, right? Every other quarterback, Taysom Hill is posturing for franchise quarterback money. Tom Brady is playing coy on social media about where he's going to go next. Drew Brees is like, I'm coming back to the Saints. We don't have a contract yet, but NBD, don't talk to my agent right now. He's probably not real happy with me at the moment.
We'll figure it out. I'm guessing it'll be, you know, similar to what he did last time. So the Saints are off the board. So there's kind of a group of teams that I find really interesting. Then there's like a second group that we won't discuss as much in depth because I think I'm like 80% sure what they're going to do at least. Okay. But there's about six or seven teams where I'm like, this could go a lot of ways. So those teams are the Colts, the Bears. Now, I think the Bears are going to keep Mitch Trubisky, but the question is, will they also do something else?
Yep.
Obviously, they're going to keep Mitch Trubisky. The Patriots, very interesting. The Chargers, extremely interesting, could go in a lot of directions. The Jaguars, who that's almost like more of a financial story than anything, which is why I'm super glad to have you, a very smart person when it comes to those things, on the show today. The Panthers. Those are the big question marks for me. Now, in the next group, I'll just quickly, the Raiders, was the Saints gone? Broncos, Bengals, Titans, Skins, Bucks, that's about it. And those are the teams where I'm like, pretty sure I know what they're going to do. How's that sound?
I would say that's all fair. And when we say pretty sure, Mina, like that's, I don't say it's like football media parlance. Like, you know, pretty sure is like, hey, like it's very possible that none of these things actually go as planned. But we are trying to sort of sift through about a million different scenarios. So let's hope that we are on the mark with these and we feel like there's at least a shot we will be.
I don't want to spend 10 minutes talking about, you know, the Skins, the Broncos, the Bengals. We know what the Bengals want to do here. Although, you know, we now, there's been some doubt cast on whether Joe Burrow is going to play along. But that's a conversation for another day. That's more draft-oriented. We'll talk about those teams. But I want to start, Field, with a team that I think a lot of people believe is the most desirable destination for quarterbacks, because there's a group of quarterbacks that are trade candidates, free agents, and then of course there's the draft, I suppose. But I think the Colts, when you really look at all the teams I mentioned in that first group, it seems like a good place to play.
Yeah, I'd say so, Mina. And I think the most important thing we can do in terms of sizing these things up and then also looking ahead is just start with the facts here. So current depth chart obviously is led by and really only contains Jacoby Brissett. Brian Hoyer's not the long-term answer. He is what he is, a nice backup plan. Jacoby Brissett is signed for one more year and has a $7 million fully guaranteed roster bonus due on March 22nd, which means that if he's on the Colts, they're paying it. If he's not on the Colts, that new team is paying it. So keep that in mind just as a sort of potential date, right? So if they do act fast to try to move on, to supplant Jacoby Brissett, it may be that they might have to wait until after that bonus is paid. In any event, they've got tons of cap space and an owner that is willing to spend. So the facts are this. They have a quarterback signed up for one more year at a reasonable number, but a quarterback that I think we saw the ceiling scraped already early last season, and it's just not good enough, right? I mean, I don't think it's good enough to be a quarterback that is sort of above my very arbitrarily drawn line of what it takes to be a guy that you sign long-term and feel like he's going to win you games consistently over the term of that contract.
So, but what you said, by the way, about the Colts having so much cap space is so important. As we look at each of these teams, we need to talk about their cap space, not only in terms of the quarterback position, but who they might add around them. And that's part of the reason why, again, this team is so desirable to from a quarterback perspective, because you already got the offensive line. You got T.Y. Hilton. I imagine they'll keep Marlon Mack. I think Devin Funchess was on like a one-year deal.
It was a one-year deal. It was a prove-it deal. Unfortunately, he didn't have a chance to prove it. Yeah.
So anyways, this is a team that could go out and get weapons. Paris Campbell kind of underperformed as a rookie, but I think jury's still out on him. So you look at Brissett, and I agree with you about his ceiling. You know, he actually started off, he looked a lot better at the beginning of the season. By the end, he finished, so you look at his numbers, 21st in QBR, 21st in adjusted yards per attempt, and you think, that's pretty good. But then you realize it was basically what I call a bumper bowling offense, right? Like, they really didn't ask a lot out of him, and he didn't try much, and he wasn't that successful. I mean, he, in fact, underperformed relative to what was schemed up for him, finished 31st in completion percentage over expected completion percentage, which is the next-gen stat I really love, we use a lot. 32nd in tight window throws. So I think a lot of the quarterbacks we're going to talk about today sort of fall into, you could call them game managers, right? We're going to get to some of those options. But I think he's at the lower level of that game manager group, if that makes sense, where some of those game managers have the potential, like they have the upside to, if they have the weapons around them, I think elevate to a little bit more than that. That could be like your Teddies, your Andy Dalton. We'll talk about those guys. I don't think Brissett, as you said, I just don't think he's the guy who, at this point, it seems, elevates the team around him. So they've got the space. I think they know that. Now my question to you, Field, is who do they want?
Well, I think Phillip Rivers is the obvious name to connect, not just because Melvin Gordon suggested it over the weekend. Of course, Melvin, a teammate of Phillip for a long time, but not like, I don't really believe that Melvin has like intimate knowledge of Phillip Rivers' game plan for free agency. He's not going back to Los Angeles, but he has connections in Indianapolis that include Frank Reich, their head coach, and Nick Sirianni, their offensive coordinator, who worked very closely with Phillip and is regarded as like really one of the ascending offensive minds in the NFL right now. So that's why we do this dot connecting, whether you want to call it low-hanging fruit or not, on Phillip Rivers to the Colts. But Mina, you mentioned some of the other important parts, and like the more important parts. I sounded almost Irish. Pirates there for a second. You got the Irish accent going. You know, they've got plenty of money to spend, right? And I don't know specifically what the number Phillip Rivers is desiring, or if it even has a number that he desires that, hey, once I get above that amount, we can start to play ball with any team. But yeah, he would be an obvious name for them just because of the connections. And a lot of people have pushed back, because a few days ago I noted on Twitter that the Colts are about as primed to make a move and be aggressive this offseason as any team. They've got tons of cap space. They've got an excellent GM who's got three top 45 picks. And they are also a roster that's relatively, you know, the boxes have been checked at a lot of the key spots. And the pushback has been, yeah, that's where they were each of the past 2 years. No, they were not each of the past 2 years, because there's a difference this year compared to those 2 years. Andrew Luck, at this point last year, was still the Colts quarterback of the future and arguably the most, you know, even if he wasn't quite as young as someone like Patrick Mahomes, considered one of the, if not the, ultimate building blocks in football. It's different this year. You have a long-term quarterback question mark that it's hard to find a quarterback, and even though Phillip Rivers is not a long-term option in the sense he's not going to play for five more years, like, I think if you're examining your window for the next three seasons, wouldn't Phillip Rivers be a reasonable option if you're Chris Ballard and needing a quarterback stability, or needing that's some really quarterback stability?
Yeah, that's an interesting idea, because one thing that strikes me about Rivers, Field, is he might be willing to do like a 1 year, right? I'm not saying that the Colts want that or anything, but I think you're not going to get with that with Brady unless he resigns in New England, I believe, or at least financially. But I could see Rivers saying, you know what? Let's go for the Super Bowl one year, you know, $30 million or whatever. And I could see I could see Indianapolis saying, okay, like, let's draft a guy. And that's a whole other, what, the 13th. They're picking 13th, right?
Yep.
13th. So they could, you know, either move up and get in the Tua sweepstakes, probably have to move up for Justin Herbert at this point, whatever, if they like someone in the draft.
Yeah.
I could see them doing like a combination plan with Rivers as the bridge quarterback and then drafting a guy for the future, because there's no young stud out there, right? Like when we talk about, I mean, I guess Teddy's 29, 28,
he's 27,
or something,
believe it or not.
But
yeah.
I don't view him as that sort of stud. I like Teddy a lot, and we'll talk about him momentarily. To me, I don't really see. He's another one where, like, I think you look at the Colts and you think, okay, they've got this quick strike offense. You know, Teddy likes that. You know, he'd be a good fit. Rivers makes more sense to me, despite the fact that he was not good last year. And that's something I want to talk to you about, because I think we have to puzzle through how much of that was because he played behind one of the worst offensive lines in football, and how much of it was age-related decline, potentially. And when I think about Phillip Rivers last year, I think, you know, in many ways, he was the same guy, extremely quick release time, extremely accurate, great touch at all levels of the field. He could still make those deep throws. He just took terrible care of the football. So I ask you this, Field, like, do you think Indianapolis looks at how he played last year and is concerned about how volatile he was?
Well, so when you're evaluating a guy that you would like to acquire, Mina, you are certainly locked in more on the positives rather than the negatives, which include an absurd amount of turnovers and careless plays, as you alluded to. And you sort of started this conversation with, is it more about the people around him or the player and his age-related decline? Let's be honest, it's probably somewhere in the middle. But never, I think we always, you know, I will just point to how often NFL personnel people think about and coaches too, think about context with quarterback play. And the extreme example, and I say extreme and that's totally underselling it, is Patrick Mahomes playing it at Texas Tech, where every game he knew, if they didn't score 55, they had no chance of winning. So that led to a certain style of play from Patrick Mahomes that some people, hey, too erratic with the football and too many risks and things like that. I get it. That's a very, very extreme example. But the reason why I mention that is some of what Phillip Rivers did last year was like, hey, listen, if I'm not taking chances on some of these throws that I understand, and a lot of people that are watching this are going to say, like, what are you doing? We have no shot. The defense was not quite as good as it was, I would say, a year prior, at least in some ways that felt objective to me. And then the offensive line, as you mentioned, Mina, like, offensive line was, again, poor. Melvin Gordon was not there for much of the season. In fact, they were constantly playing from behind last year. That I think it did sort of alter the way that we perceive Phillip Rivers, because I'm not saying he was not at least partially responsible for putting them in bad spots, but they were often playing from a less than ideal spot for a quarterback to look like a stud player.
What, you mean to tell me Phillip Rivers was trying to mount comebacks with less than 2 minutes in a football game?
All of us on Sunday afternoon lived for like what is around 7:15 Eastern time on Sunday afternoons to find out how Phillip Rivers and the Chargers will find a way to lose yet another devastating Sunday affair.
I think it's really you make a lot of really fair points about context, because like playing behind the Colts offensive line and playing behind the Chargers offensive line are playing two different sports. So
yes, totally.
I don't think we can underestimate how different quarterbacks can look. And I think that's why, you know, like Phillip Rivers is definitely like a YOLO quarterback. Like he's like a much milder version of like a Jameis, right? Where you're going to have a little bit more volatility with him, but you also have that upside that I said that I think has been proven to be missing with Teddy. Let's talk about Teddy here, actually, because I don't think there's not a natural fit for Teddy right now. And I do think the Colts would be one of the teams that we talked about that could be a candidate. I think Jeremy Fowler reported a couple days ago that he's expected to have like a strong market. I think he did.
Yeah, I think so. But
big
by the way,
deal was
yeah,
being thrown around.
So Jeremy's words, I don't say they got, I don't know about twisted, but just to be fair to Jeremy, the number that was floated on the internet, which it's the internet, so you got to take it with a grain of salt, was that he was saying $30 million. To my knowledge, I've yet to see anywhere where Jeremy actually mentioned that $30 million per year figure for Teddy Bridgewater. Jeremy's phrasing, from what I have seen and saw, and then also seen on Twitter, is basically he's expected to have a strong market. And Mina, you and I texted about this, I think this was around like 1 Eastern time, so almost 4 hours ago, and I was saying, I'm having a hard time finding a fit as well. I've since come up with a team, but I can't take credit for it. Do you have a team that comes to mind?
It's not the Colts for you.
It's not the Colts.
Okay. Leah, tell me the team now, and then we'll skip to that team.
So I'm not, it's not my idea, but I did NFL Live today, and we had Adam Schefter on Glowpoint for a couple of segments, and he mentioned the idea that the Bucs could be a suitor for Teddy Bridgewater. And what's fascinating about that is a lot of things, right?
What?
I know.
That sounds crazy.
Yeah.
Wait, a Bruce Arians offense Teddy
feels
Bridgewater.
Like the antithesis, right?
That doesn't make any sense.
Right. No risk it, no biscuit versus like, you know, Mr. whatever it is, like 5.8 yards per attempt or something last year during that 5-game sample size as the starting quarterback for the Saints. But, I think that some of the Jameis stuff is, I don't think Bruce Arians is just coach speaking us when he talks about how like you've got to examine all your options, and he's got to, you know, he's made no mystery they're going to do their diligence on quarterbacks. They're familiar with Teddy. They play in the same division, at least for the past couple of seasons. But besides that, like, I'm really striking out. So you think the Colts could be a
no?
A
well, actually, I want to stay on the Bucs for a second, because I think that's really interesting, because basically you and I are talking about, I think when we talk about these quarterbacks that are available, like, we're not talking about the horrible quarterbacks or the elite quarterbacks, right? We're talking about quarterbacks who could go a lot of different ways or are very context dependent. Like, if you're even in the mix here, and I, by the way, I'd put Tom Brady in this group at this point, you know, where he is in his career, you know, you're not a sure thing.
Yep.
And those are two kinds of quarterbacks that it's like, it's a kind of a philosophical question. Do you want the guy who's going to execute, take care of the football? Or do you want a more volatile option where you're going to get a lot of turnover-worthy throws, but you also have a guy who can, you know, lead a comeback or make big plays with some degree of frequency. Now, obviously, like we said earlier, Jameis is the extreme version of that, right? I look at the Bucks and I wonder if they'd be better off with the safe guy now, because Todd Bowles is building something special on that defense. I think we really saw that at the end of the year. And they've got great playmakers. I think there's holes on that offensive line and there's still question marks. I said it was crazy because I can't imagine Arians and Teddy, but I kind of like his fit with that football team, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I think you're right, because the formula could change a little bit, right? It doesn't have to be win by scoring right. 37. It could be, let's be better in the secondary, which yeah. they were, I thought, during the second half of last year, and then be really good against the run. I'm not trying to pander to you, local Washington Huskies enthusiast, but and I'm sure you have watched him. Vita Vea.
He's been awesome.
Was ridiculous last year. Like, it's absurd. Like, we're not supposed to.
The defense is good.
Yeah, it is good. We're not supposed to care about 350-pound defensive tackles because they can't play enough snaps, they can't rush the passer, yada, yada, yada. No, Vita Vea is the exception. One of the most enjoyable players to watch last year. But you're right. So Teddy would fit in a model where it's, hey, let's play better defense. Let's find a way to retain some of the key guys that we have this offseason besides Jameis that are free agents, which include, or probably led by Shaq Barrett, right? And Ndamukong Suh, also a free agent this upcoming offseason. So guys like that that contributed to some winning efforts could be the priorities, whereas rather than offering Jameis $30-plus million a year, which as a young quarterback he might still be in his mind expecting, you go a more discounted route for Teddy, and you use the additional cap space to sort of reallocate that towards areas of more pressing need.
The offensive line.
Yeah, sure.
Well, you just threw a bomb into this list, because now you've convinced me that's a fascinating idea. Again, it's hard for me to envision with Bruce Arians, but...
Sure. Yeah, I'm with you.
God, I feel like Bucks fans would love a change.
Oh, my God.
Would love, no turnovers. It'd be really nice.
Listen, we need it. We need Jameis in our life, because he's great for our Twitter, right? He is great for us on Sundays. He's great for Twitter. He is a match made in social media heaven. But the Bucks may not necessarily... They care not for our likes and retweets, all right? They care for wins. They care for eating Ws. And that's what that may be why Jameis is not the quarterback.
Is there a team, just while we're here, like maybe the Chargers, that you could see going for Jameis?
Mm. So everything is about price, right? Everything is, of course, I know I'm stating the obvious
there. He'd be a free agent.
He would be a free agent. He's going to not expect anything to come cheap. The Chargers, interesting. I don't know.
There's going to be an odd. It's like musical chairs. There's going to be an odd man out.
Yeah, I was going to say, Mina. It's like it's hard to necessarily. Like one domino could all of a sudden change the landscape of like four or five teams, right? Like that could dramatically change how what a current quarterback sort of job security feels like. Moreover, I always talk about this I mentioned this a little bit earlier. Coaches are stubborn, and that's part of, and that's a very good thing in a lot of ways. And part of the reason why that's important is that while you and I may see 33 touchdowns and 30 interceptions and focus a lot on the 30 interceptions, a coach might say, I see the good stuff. I see the stuff from Jameis that made him the number one overall pick, and I'm going to turn him not into another interception machine, but I'm going to make him reach his highest ability. This is what happened with Jay Cutler, I felt like, during his career. Every coach was like, I see the raw stuff with Jay.
Totally.
I'm going to
make it's that kind of guy, too,
exactly.
By the way.
Yes.
It's the tools guy. It's the guy who can make the big throws that always seems to be viewed as a potential reclamation project. Let's talk about the Patriots. I'm convinced Brady's just going to go back here. And increasingly, I see our colleagues saying, I don't know, this might be it. And I just don't see it. Just to quickly, before you know a lot more about this team than most people, but just quick facts. March 18th is a huge day for New England, right? Because if Brady signs after March 18th, there's a lot more dead money on the Patriots books, twice as much, $13.5 million.
That's right.
So they will probably make a move if this happens, as I believe it will. I think it's just going to be another 1 year with an option type thing would be my guess. They have a fair amount of cap space. They have some free agents they have to re-sign. Joe Thuney being, I think, the one who jumps out to me at the most.
And I think
guys
probably
on defense.
Yeah.
You think he's a goner? Okay, yeah, well, but that so does that mean you agree with me then and you think Brady's coming back? Let's just stay in quarterback territory for a second.
I think he is back, Mina, but let me say, and I can't stress enough that it's just think, right? And I'm trying to put myself in the mind of Tom Brady, and like that's sort of an unfair thing to do for any of these players, but because there's always more than what meets the eye. However, 20 years, and if Tom Brady's priority is to win, where is the most obvious place to play? The answer is New England. If his priority is to make money, that runs counter to a guy who I actually think that the Tom Brady has taken a discount narrative has been dramatically overplayed during his career. But it's clear that he is not looking to just to get every last penny of what he can based off of how his career has played up until this point. I think he cares about and respects some of the players that have preceded him that are considered legends, and I think that he has seen the good and bad of leaving a team other than the one that he has played for exclusively during his career. And I think Tom probably would be saying to the Patriots, another thing that I laugh at, by the way, is so I think it's fair to say that Tom Brady would like for the weapons to be better next year than they were this year. But, Mina, it's like they played their hand last year. It was Antonio Brown. It just obviously went up in smoke with, you know, as quickly as it came together. But like that one game.
They also had an elite defense. They also had an elite defense.
Sure.
I
saw this and I'm not going to try to take Ben Affleck to task, too frequently, but I saw him like get up on Tuesday
morning. Drag him field.
And he was like, you know, basically the point was like, if the Patriots had done a better job of surrounding Tom Brady, they would have 8 or 9 Super Bowls. I'm like, oh, I'm sorry, Ben.
What?
6 in 19 years is not enough, right?
Okay.
Like, they played in 9 Super Bowls in 19 years, Mina.
Let's talk about the weapons thing. Let's talk about Brady because, like, so you so and I are funny. On the same page here. I think, I know, where we both think, I just don't think any destination other than, I mean, you're hearing the Colts, Chargers, and Bears the most.
And Raiders, just, too. Yep.
And the Raiders, right? First of all, I don't really... Like, yes, the Colts have Keenan Allen.
Chargers have Keenan Allen, yep.
Or, pardon me, Chargers, rather. And they're going to probably resign Hunter Henry, I think. But terrible offensive line. You think Brady wants to play behind that offensive line?
Oh, no.
The Colts have the offensive line. They don't have better playmakers by much, in my opinion.
I think it's a toss-up at best. I mean, I think Edelman and Brady, it's probably a better fit, Tom Brady to Edelman, than it is Tom Brady to T.Y. Hilton, right?
Brady's not throwing down the field. Right. And then I actually love the Bears' weapons. We'll talk about the Bears in a second, but I don't think their situation with Mitch Trubisky, I don't think that's the direction they're going to go in. So we'll talk about the Bears. But yeah, so Patriots make the most sense to me. So here's what I want to talk to you about. How good is Brady now? So, obviously, not a great season last year, but the counter, and I think this is a totally valid counter, is that his receivers they did not get open. They really just didn't get open.
Yep.
And, you know, and that manifests itself in the numbers, how bad he was under pressure. Although I do believe, because that's always been his contract, you know, this ability to, you know, his pocket footwork and ability to get rid of the ball quickly, and also his kind of ability to throw from anywhere, that kind of dissipated last year. I think a lot of it is due to the receivers. I do think those are things that do tend to decline a bit with age. I think sometimes people just think it's, oh, they can't throw a deep ball. No, there's like a lot of things, little things. That said, I think if he had better receivers, he's still a plus quarterback. I don't think he's a great quarterback, but he's still the best option of all the guys we're talking about.
Yeah, I would say he's the best option of all the players we're talking about. I still think if properly surrounded with weapons, given the system that they run, that like within the context of what they want to do, he would be one of the 5 best options in the league, right? Which
is options, weird? Yes.
I don't mean like amongst the available options. I mean like if they were starting from scratch and they could pick anybody, like Tom Brady would be one of their 5 most preferred.
Ooh, you think so?
Yeah, I do. I just think the mental processing of everything they want to do within that system, I think he speaks the language. He doesn't speak it. He is the language of the Patriots offense. Last year, what I saw that was different from previous years was probably too many throws. Like, I'm not talking about missed throws where like, contested catch situation. It just falls, you know, an inch or two away from the intended target, but too many throws that I thought were like layups for Tom Brady that he missed compared to last year. Decision making a little bit more rushed than I've seen in previous years. And, you know, like other than that, Mina, like I think a decent amount of it is attributable to, you know, the weapons around him and just the lack of middle of field presence. There was basically no threat other than outside on the edges. And when I say outside on the edges, I mean a lot of that is like within 5 or 6 air yards of line of scrimmage. Like there was so little vertical threat from the Patriots last year that defenses basically just said, like, you know, like when a team enters the red zone, it changes the passing route tree because you've got a natural boundary in the back, right? The Patriots, it felt like their entire route tree was what you'd have in the red zone because they had no vertical threat down the field.
Yeah. They need a tight end, yes, they obviously. Do. I just kind of wrapping it up, you know, looking at their weapons and who they might add and who the free agents are. I was just looking at the list this morning. It's not actually that great of a group. Emmanuel Sanders jumped out to me as the guy they probably should have gotten this year. Yeah. And I think what we saw him do in San Francisco is just so perfect for this Patriots offense.
It's a bad year for wide receivers and free agency.
Not great.
It's the inverse of last year in this sense, in that I think pass rushers will get paid handsomely this offseason in free agency. Whereas last year, a lot of teams said, hey, we have the draft coming around the corner. It's going to be a great class. This year,
and yet,
wide receivers will not get paid in bunches, I don't think.
It's a tough offense for rookies. And if you're really focused on the near and present with Brady, I don't think the New England just be like, okay, this is the best wide receiver draft of the last 10 years. So it's a little tricky. I think you're going to want to look at free agents, potentially even trades. It's not a lot. You just need like a tight end and one more receiver, really. It's not.
I'm with you, Mina. I'm with you. I know like it seems really bad last year, but it's like if the starting point for your wide receiver group is insert one more wide receiver that's good, plus Julian Edelman, plus Mohamed Sanu, who.
He'll be better.
He'll be much better.
Yeah,
plus N'Keal Harry, like. That's fine as a wide receiver group. We assume, like, you know, hey, that's only 4. Like, how many teams have, like, you know, 19 wide receivers that just, like, up and down the depth chart are good?
Also, draft guys in the later rounds, too. You know, I mean, we'll do draft pods, but increasingly I feel like NFL teams should just draft a ton of receivers and see how
sticks.
That goes.
Yeah.
Before we get to questions, I just quickly with the Bears, you know, I mentioned I think they're going to start Trubisky. I just gave away my idea for them. They're going to start Trubisky. This is the perfect situation. Like what they want is a Tannehill scenario where they bring in a cheap backup and then he's going to get the opportunity when Trubisky looks like Trubisky. That's just how I see this playing out. I don't think they're not going to go after a big guy because they're going to give Trubisky that shot. I just think that's inevitable at this point.
Yep.
So Mariota was one who came up a lot when Mark Helfrich was there because obviously from college, Helfrich is gone. But I like his. So they brought in Bill Lazor.
Yep.
I think last was Cincinnati, right?
Yep.
Right. Top of my head. And then John DeFilippo. I actually love them with Mariota, who Ryan Pace was interested in back when he was in the draft, reportedly. We don't have to get into the whole Mariota, what does he have at this point, but I like the idea of him in Matt Nagy's offense. I just think he's the upside guy. You don't know, but you're not going to spend a ton of money.
I could be so far off on this that it's not even funny, Mina. But sometimes when I hear the Bears speaking about Mitch Trubisky, it almost feels like they are working so hard to protect his confidence.
Yeah.
And nothing would shatter a quarterback's confidence more than signing a threat to take his job that is an obvious threat. And that's why I should think Marcus Mariota is a good example of a quarterback that might make sense for them. So if they sign Tom Brady, then like you might as well offer Mitch Trubisky for a bag of balls somewhere else, right? Because clearly he's not going to be part of your future plans. But if
or
you sign
Cam
Marcus
or Rivers,
yeah, exactly. Any of these
get out of that tier. It's not going to happen.
But if you offer, if you sign someone like Marcus Mariota, there are going to be enough people that are going to, hey, you know, like, first of all, it's not going to be for major
money. He's not a threat.
Like,
he's so
Marcus.
Nice.
Hey, that a failed first, a number failed, another failed former number 2 overall pick, right? It could be one of those where it's, you could paint it as we really feel like there's good value and depth here in having Marcus. He's an A-plus teammate, a guy that we think has a chance to help us if we need him behind Mitch in case of an injury like we saw last year when Mitch got hurt. That's how you could sort of position it, when the reality is it could be, honestly, what Ryan Tannehill was for the Titans this past year when he replaced Marcus Mariota, right?
Yeah.
It's like, hey, a guy that's not great enough perception-wise right now to be an obvious threat to take your job, but if we get to a point where we need to replace you, there's actually good enough football in him that he could be a reasonable upgrade.
And I continue to believe so much of Mariota's problems were health related, even when he was quote unquote healthy. So
yeah,
I still think, you know, he was never really the same after that first big injury in the NFL. And I think, when you look at what happened with Tannehill, to me, he strikes me as this could happen with him. I don't know if it will, but it could. And like I said, I like the fit with Nagy. All right, we're going to talk about the Panthers, Chargers, and the Jags, which I think really interesting. And then just quickly through some of the other teams. But first, let's take a quick break. You could be headed to a game or going on an epic road trip. No matter where your travels take you, Marathon can help you get there with quality top-tier gas. Marathon gasolines are formulated with STP additives. They keep your vehicle running at peak performance by optimizing fuel economy, removing those ugly deposit buildups, and reducing emissions. And right now, you can get 5 cents off every gallon every day with Make It Count rewards from Marathon. Plus, you can earn points for additional savings on fuel, airfare, hotels, and more. This is definitely a win-win deal. It's quick and easy to join. Just download the free Make It Count app or go to makeitcount.com/radio. So join the Marathon team and start saving today. This offer is valid only at participating Marathon stations. Remember, wherever your journey goes, it pays to start at Marathon. Marathon, fueling the American spirit.
Question. Lenny, for your thoughts.
As always, guys, thank you so much for your iTunes reviews. I really love reading them. They're often really funny and, frankly, truly bizarre. There's a lot of really good questions, and we're going to take a few of them right now. Field, I feel like we might have a difference of opinion on this one. Daddy.
Is that the actual handle? Daddy?
Yeah, it is, yeah. Asks, is Matt Patricia the right guy in Detroit? Man, it's hard to say yes right now. How about that Darius Slay stuff, by the way?
Yeah, that's really interesting.
And then you look how good Quandre. You and I did the field. We were doing the trade when Quandre Diggs, you and I were recording a pod when Quandre Diggs was traded, right?
Yep.
He was awesome.
Yeah.
In Seattle.
Really good for Seattle.
So good.
Yep.
You just look at some of the decisions made in Detroit over the last couple of years, and obviously they had a tough break with Stafford, and they're really unlucky too last year, but yep. You just can't feel great there.
Well, and here's the reality for them is that it's everything's on the table in 2020, right? I mean,
yeah.
if they don't meet if they don't meet expectations, it doesn't matter what I think about their potential, whether Matt Patricia's the right fit or not. Like, if they don't make the playoffs next year, I expect change. I mean, if they go 8-7-1 and miss it by a half game or something, who knows? But 5-11, 6-10, you can expect a change. I mean, the owner already stated as much just 2 months ago.
Yeah, and the Caldwell thing hangs over it too, I think.
Sure, absolutely, no question.
As it should.
Yep.
By the way, a lot of your guys' questions were about quarterback free agents and teams and stuff that we're actually addressing in this podcast, so some of them I had to skip over because we're answering them. Texan in Seattle 713 says, I've seen a lot of beer drinking celebrations. If a team did a weed smoking celebration, do you think there would be a fine? Fascinating question, because obviously marijuana is not, although they've loosened the rules, legal in the NFL, but you'd only be pantomiming it. But there's rules on the celebrations, right? Like, what are the, like, you can't, I don't know what the exact rules are. I know you can't.
I don't know
pop.
The exact rules either. I
you
just
can't
know
mime
that
a
we've
weapon.
Come a long way from where we were previously. But let me be clear: if somebody did something related to the weed, that team, that player, heck, who knows? They are going
to
face major retribution.
You'd have
from
to be
officials.
Really good.
Yeah, I was going to say, how creative can you get?
You could do it, and then you could be like, "No, that was just." You could say it was something else, and that
I'm
you were
more of a vapor. I'm a vapor, you know.
I'm a vapor. That was drooling. Okay. Mike the Bay asks. He talks. His review is about how much he loves snow games, And then he asks, why does the NFL insist on hosting Super Bowls in warm cities? Well, Mike, it's because they want people to come.
Yeah, I'll say, with proper respect due to the great city of Minneapolis, which is a fine, fine place to be in the summertime.
So
I mean, we heard all the people complain about Chicago this past weekend for NBA All-Star weekend. Minnesota was like 30 degrees colder during the Super Bowl. The two teams playing, the Patriots, Eagles, like they were literally driving players like half a block to get to wherever they needed to go to. It was so cold.
I remember that Super Bowl. I was at the game, which, by the way, one of my favorite Super Bowl. Like that was an awesome game, and I think that was just. I was so glad I was there. Right, feeling special. But I had trouble finding the media bus, and honestly, me and another reporter were like lost walking for like three blocks after the game, and I felt like I was in The Revenant. When I got to the bus, I was like crawling up the steps, just like shivering because it was, I want to say like 15 degrees that night.
15 minus?
It was awful.
Yeah, brutal.
Football question. Judge 3 asks, I think Judge 3 is a Rams fan. How bad is Goff's contract for the Rams? Oh boy, it is a lot of money this year. I don't have it in front of me, but I know it's a lot on the books. I think Gurley's contract is a much bigger issue.
Right. Yeah, I was going to say, Mina, is that whereas the quarterback contract can look particularly prohibitive when it's the leading albatross on your roster, I actually don't think that Jared Goff's is on that roster because I think they already have regret about the way the Todd Gurley contract has aged, and we're only, 2 years into it. So Jared's contract is a negative in the sense that it's really difficult for them to remove themselves from it, right?
Yes.
At the same time, like when he signed it, it was market like that. Unfortunately,
yes.
Or fortunately, depending on whose side you're on, the quarterback or the team side, quarterbacks just get paid more than the last guy to sign a contract. That's
and if I had to pick a player who has the potential, I think, to fulfill that value more, it's Jared Goff, right? Like, obviously, he took a downturn last year with flashes of playing well, but I think it's more likely that he plays at a level that the contract's worth it than it is Todd Gurley. But yeah, they're in a tough cap situation. There's a few things they could do. We'll talk about that later. Obviously, they're not one of the quarterback teams. Final question, B God Game asks me, is Lenny fixed? Funny story.
Yeah, that's a you question to answer.
Lenny wasn't fixed when I got him. So we adopted him, but it was at night. I remember it vividly because I was wearing a Seahawks jersey because we had played that day and we lost to the Chargers. It was in September of 2015, I believe. And I was in a bad mood, of course. And this pet place was having a shelter, was having an adoption event in New York. And he was supposed to show up from Alabama. This is his origin story. It's like a superhero thing. And he was supposed to get there at, like, I don't know, 8 or something. I forgot. And he didn't show up until, like, 11 p.m. because the car was late. And he jumped out of the car. It was black, pitch black outside. And they were like, well, do you want to take him for a walk to see if you want him? So I took him for a walk. And I was like, yeah. And they're like, okay, great. Everything's good. He's got all his shots. He's fixed. Get home with him. The next morning, I look down. I'm like, this dog's not fixed.
Oh,
he was not. So, yeah.
Path.
Yeah, so it was a late in life operation.
Okay.
All right. So let's talk about the Jaguars.
Okay. Yep.
I think this team's really interesting. So I'm going to lay out the finances because I think that is the starting point for this team. So obviously the Jaguars paid a lot of money to Nick Foles, didn't like the contract at the time, mostly because they didn't know who they were bidding against. He got hurt. Minshew came in. They brought back Foles. Benched Foles after 2.5 games, and then Minshew came back in. So they're on their Minshew cost nothing. Foles, okay. So here's the deal with Foles: if they just released him, they would have to eat $34 million.
Yeah, not happening.
Not happening.
Yep.
On the roster, he's like $22 million sitting on the bench. Now, if they designated him as a post-June release, they could spread out the money. It hit their cap this year at 21.
One problem, though.
What?
Not this year. You cannot do that. Because we're in the final year of the CBA, teams are permitted from
this
doing
this. Is why you're
here. Yeah. So because
okay, explain.
As of right now, there is no salary cap for 2021 because there is no NFL season for 2021. as you and I are talking, there is no CBA in place.
Jesus.
So teams are prohibited from essentially pushing money forward onto that 2021 cap year with a post-June 1 release, given that there is no CBA in place. So it's basically cut them or bust. Or I guess trade.
Or trade. Yeah. That's the other option. This is the most desirable one to Jacksonville.
I would agree on that.
So they'd have to eat a fair amount of dead money. They'd get a bit of cap release.
Yep.
Relief. Now.
Yeah, they would have to eat, in terms of dead money,
18.7. Okay.
Right. Yeah, it's $6.25 million, which is one quarter of his signing bonus times three, because there are 3 years left on the deal. In any event, it's a lot of money, but if you're trading him, it accomplishes a few things. But I want to get to something that I think is overlooked often in a moment. But just, you know, obviously you would get some compensation. You would get some cash relief. You're not going to pay him his base salary of $15 million, which when you're speaking to an owner and saying, hey, I'm saving you $15 million bucks, that stuff matters, right? It also paves the way very clearly to who your starting quarterback is, I would think, in Gardner Minshew, right?
There's also the question of whether any team would trade for him because they devalued him so much. Sure. I actually think you'd have to do like a Brock Osweiler thing, right? Where you're dumping a cap, a pick.
Yep.
And the other team's just eating cap space. It's actually not much, right? He's not an expensive quarterback at this point on your cap. But, you know, he was bad last year. Now, I actually think we've reached the point where probably people are too low on him because he might have been rushed back. I mean, he only played 2.5 games. And over those games, he got worse as they went on. It was against the Colts, the Titans, and the Bucks, who, as we established, have a pretty good defense. You know, broken collarbone's a really serious injury. So I actually think there is some appeal there for a team, but.
Well, there actually is in this regard.
Yes, because of the finances, yeah.
Right, he's got no guaranteed money after 2020. Yep. I mean, if you're trading for him, it's, hey, 1 year, $15 million.
$15 million? Yeah, it's like nothing.
And if he plays well, you've got him for 2 more years at $35 million, which is a bargain.
Great deal for the next team.
Yeah,
so
I actually think there's fairly
so maybe there is a trade market for that of some of the teams we're talking about. But to go back to, so if they do all this, you know, the Jags are not in a good cap situation. So it's Minshew, right? That's if they get rid of Foles, it's not like any of these other quarterbacks we're talking about are really options for them. To me, I think it's Minshew. I like Minshew. I think right now he's like in that 17 to 25 range.
Yeah, I call it the sliding scale of quarterbacks, that on a given week, he could be one of the 12 best quarterbacks in football, right? Hmm. And then on other weeks, he could be a top 22 or top 24 quarterback, which that generally leads you into purgatory, the difference between him and most quarterbacks on that sliding scale, Mina, is that he makes
nothing
in NFL terms, so it gives you a chance to build your roster elsewhere.
Yes, and that's the thing. That's part of the reason why I like it, Field, is because I think the Jaguars and another team that we're about to talk about, they just got to clean up their books and start over at this point, right? And you're paying him nothing. You can do that. See, you know, maybe he takes another step forward and you change your mind. But this team is not going to be good next year. Right? I mean,
I would think no.
Probably not, rather. Sorry.
Right.
By the way, I like the Jay Gruden. Great with Minshew.
Yeah.
West Coast offense.
Yep.
Love that. But they just don't have a lot of talent.
They have some bloated contracts that will probably, by the time this podcast goes up, some of those guys could be cut. But here are a few things that Jacksonville is lacking. And I do want to hammer home one point that I forgot to get to earlier is, they don't have an identity anymore, right? Their identity is Gardner Minshew, which is not that that's a bad thing because he was tons of fun last year, Mina, but that shouldn't be the identity for a team that 2 years ago was knocking the door of the Super Bowl because of a dominant defense, an excellent ground and pound running game. Like, they've come a long way and not necessarily in a progressive manner since that time. They are no longer a dominant defense. They can be a very good defense, but they are not a dominant defense right now or anymore. Offensively, they really sort of changed the course of how they operated last year, and can't say it was to like great success, but it's not like they were playing, they weren't with the Chiefs prior to it. I don't know what their identity is. That's one. I think that they need to really sort of hone in on leadership on the offense side of the ball, which is really tricky if you have a quarterback question mark. And That was the point that I was to sort of the, like, we, and I'm not saying you and I are at all alone in this, and I'll speak only for myself, is that during this time of the year, we commoditize these players so frequently, right? It's, hey, you know, like, you trade Nick Foles for a third, and then next thing you know, you've got 8 picks, and then you can sign somebody for 4 years and $20 million, give him $10 million guaranteed. Like, okay, great. All sounds well and good. Trade Nick Foles to Chicago for their 4th round pick, whatever. That's really hard to do for an organization that has humans inside their building every single day. And I'm not saying that this is something that's unique to the Jaguars, but simply that we make these decisions so simple, and we make them almost like, you know, chemistry equations. These teams are having to, this Jaguars franchise that last year paid Nick Foles $25 million in the form of a signing bonus, plus his base salary, made this major investment in him, reshaped their organizational tenor by bringing Nick Foles, has to subsequently cut bait. Like, do you think Dave Caldwell, their general manager, who, I don't know if it was his decision or not, but like, but that's another topic, another time. Like, is that something that he wants to do right now? Is essentially say, you know what, I screwed up. My bad. Shouldn't have done it in the 1,000%. First place.
We always say on this podcast, if a GM makes a decision, they're unlikely to undo it.
Sure.
If it's the same GM.
Yeah.
Field, I'm obsessed with this Japanese reality show, Terrace House. And on a recent episode, one of the contestants pointed out, like, how rare it is for two people romantically to be on the same page at the same time.
Okay.
And, like, when you find that, you're really lucky. It's the same with trades. Like, we are like, oh, the Jaguars want to get rid of them. Great. Well, another team has to want to do it too. So I think it's like, this is ideal. I mean, I think right now, and I think the Jaguars know this, by the way, I think their decisions with personnel in terms of coaching and GMing probably reflect this reality. This is a transitional year, right?
Yep.
So I think perhaps they'll try to move him, see what they can get. I don't anticipate a lot of excitement on the quarterback side. I might be wrong.
No, I think you're right. I think it's going to be a lot harder for them to go shop a deal for Nick Foles that works in their favor than it would be for a scenario in which someone approaches them and says, hey, we're interested in Nick. Could we potentially get something done? Is that, you know, like, if they initiate a deal with Chicago, it could be pennies on the dollar.
Chicago is an interesting one, by the way, to cut to what we were talking about earlier about sort of they don't want a threat. They want, like, Chicago is the team where it's most likely someone's going to come in week 4, right?
Wait, and by the way, no doubt. And also, Mina, on Nick Foles, it's not the exact same thing, but, and not that I have it more figured out than the league, but don't forget, this is a league with a lot of people that value experience, character, and winning at the quarterback spot. Allow me to remind people, and again, I'm not trying to say that I have it all figured out. In successive years, Joe Flacco beat out Lamar Jackson, that's right, the Ravens, named Joe Flacco their starter over Lamar at the beginning of the 2018 season.
Yeah.
And this past year, Joe Flacco, and I understand the injury factor into it, but like, Drew Lock, not the starter for the Broncos at the beginning of the season.
Right.
John Elway traded a 4th-round draft pick for Joe Flacco.
Like, about that.
Some of the credentials that Joe brought to the table that I think made him attractive to league executives are things that Nick Foles brings to him. He is just, what, you just talked about that Minnesota Super Bowl? Nick Foles, the MVP of that game.
Such a bad contract. Panthers are the other team that I... I, at first, thought... Keep Cam, obviously. Keep Cam. I think you and I did a bunch of roundtables where we were both like, keep Cam, duh. But then the Panthers, well, they kind of imploded. So Luke Kuechly retired. Greg Olsen's gone. Trey Boston's a free agent. Cap's a mess. I think this is the year you blow it up. They got a new coach, in Matt Rhule, who's been given a long, long, long leash. They've got an owner who wants to do things differently there. I don't see the benefit of not getting value for Cam Newton right now. He's cheap. What, he's like $20 million or something, like around there.
Yeah, I think, $19 million, I believe, is the number for next year.
I think you trade him if you can, and you start over at the quarterback position.
Yeah. Here's the hard part with Cam is that there are a few factors. First of all, health. The Panthers mm-hmm. have been very clear about that. David Tepper, their owner, recently spoke about how, you know, before we can even talk about an extension, we need to see how he looks medically. And it's hard to do that even during the off season until, like, you know, being out there in gym shorts and throwing the football is a little bit different than taking hits when you've got, you know, somewhat of a recent rap sheet of injuries. But that's factor one. And factor two is this, Mina, is if you trade Cam right now, what can you get for him that justifies it? Because if, and I know this is a big if he plays really well, $19 million is a heist for Cam Newton next year, right? You'd be just as well served to keep Cam Newton and try to maximize best play out of him this year and then see what happens next offseason. So, and then the third point is probably what you just mentioned, is that, like, yeah, we're talking about how it makes sense for them to trade Cam Newton, but, like, where's the obvious fit right now? There are potential fits. There are paper fits, but who is, you know, running to the front of the Cam Newton line right now and saying, here's what we want Cam, and here's what we want. Here's what we're willing to ship you in order to get Cam Newton.
How much would you give up for him?
Yeah.
You're saying that as... So the team that I like him on is the final team.
Okay.
And that is the Chargers.
The Chargers? Okay, yep. I like him there too.
He's cheap.
Yep.
It's 1 year. Obviously, so much of this is contingent on his health.
Yeah.
And it's not just the foot, right? I mean, he's had just so many injuries.
Like, would you do a fourth? I mean, if Joe Flacco, who's obviously
yes!
a much lesser
yes!
player, I'm trying to get people's expectations in a certain
spot,
right?
Graphics.
Is that, like, you know, last year Joe Flacco, who was an inferior player with an onerous contract, got the Ravens a fourth, right? So Cam, who is a superior player, but just 1 year left on his deal, like, if you're the Chargers and you're saying, like, you know, 1 year left on a guy's contract, no guarantee we keep him, like, that, I think, is where things get a little bit trickier for Cam Newton. I think probably you're probably right. Maybe a third was, would be an excellent deal for Cam Newton.
But teams
are also, they value draft capital, as you know, a significant
amount.
Yeah,
but if he's healthy, a third and a $19 million quarterback in Cam Newton on 1 year is a freaking steal,
sure,
in my opinion, if he's healthy. Let's talk about the Chargers now. Just to go back to what the Panthers should do, to probably draft someone, right? I mean, you're gonna need a bridge guy.
Here's why, as much as I think, you know, it's you and I agree, like, don't give up on Cam. This is step one for the Chargers, for the Panthers, right?
Yeah.
Think about all the changes. So, new head coach, new owner, new coordinators, Luke Kuechly retired. Like, so much is changing. Like, not that you're going to be tanking next year, but, like, you could justify, like, your fan base is going to be patient. 7 year contract for Matt Rhule. Like, if they want to basically strip this thing down to, you know, to level one, they could do so. And even if they're not, this could be like, I mean, I'm not trying to say this is what's going to happen, but this could be like the Dolphins, Mina, last year.
Yes.
Where, like, even if
and this is an owner who seems willing to do that. I mean, I'm speculating,
no,
but everything
no,
we've heard about him.
Yes, everything aligns with the idea of being patient, taking the long view, and if that means trading Cam, even though I just said, you know, the reservations I had or just how it's some of the limitations on it, it's on the table. If that means that you are drafting a quarterback early or bypassing one and trading Cam and just sort of figuring it out for a year, like the Dolphins.
Trade him to the Chargers for a third in Tyrod, and then you're not tanking.
It would be fun. Yeah, it would be fun.
You cut Dontari Poe. I mean, they've got a ton of. I mentioned Trey Boston, but McCoy, Bradbury. I mean, the free agent list is long here. So the Chargers actually have said, Anthony Lynn came out and did say, you know, they like Tyrod, and everyone who knows me knows I've long been a Tyrod defender, but I just don't think the Chargers are rolling into that new stadium with Tyrod Taylor as their quarterback.
I'm with you.
I just don't see it. And that's another part of the reason why I think Cam Newton makes a ton of sense for them, because he's flashy. Chargers are a desirable team. I said the Colts were the most desirable team. I think the Bears are desirable, but I think they're limited in what they're going to do. I love the Bears' weapons. That's a whole other thing. I think the Chargers, they obviously have weapons, good defense. We'll see what happens with Hunter Henry. Russell Okung's a free agent. Offensive line's not good. But they could make some noise. They're a good team. They're not a tanking team. Let's put it that way. Now, other than Cam Newton, is there anything else you could see them doing, including the draft?
Yes. So they have the sixth pick?
Six, yes.
And
it's going to get crazy.
Yep. And they have the sixth pick, which would put them, I don't think that quite, you know, this is a different year than last year, because last year teams were able to hold steady and get quarterbacks that were at least on their radar. The Giants got the apple of their eye and Daniel Jones at pick six and the Redskins got Dwayne Haskins at whatever. I hope you remember well. This year, I don't think it's going to be like that. I think Tua's going to go early and Justin Herbert's going to go early. And I hope that you and I are in Vegas covering the show for the ESPN streaming show on Twitter and other mediums. And so I think that the Chargers at pick six, and the other thing about quarterbacks is that just because you, me, and Todd McShay and Mel Kiper might say, like, hey, Justin Herbert is like one notch below Tua and Joe Burrow, if the Chargers like don't feel that way, it's, I compare quarterbacks to home shopping. Even if things are comparably priced, like if you don't believe one is worth the $50K that the other one is worth, like that's like, that you're not going to buy it, right? Even if you found two homes that are very, you know, close in terms of price, but you hate one of them, like you're not willing to spend that money, even though you have it within your budget. So I think that, if the Chargers are enamored by a quarterback, it could well be that they have to move up from pick six. And the always interesting dynamic with the NFL is that free agency takes place before the draft, Mina. So, like, if we have a very good idea of what the Chargers' plans are for the draft before the draft even gets there.
By the way, I actually think the Chargers would be a great spot for Tua because they could have Tyrod as the bridge. Again, I don't know if they'd be willing to do that going to the new stadium necessarily.
Yeah.
Tyrod is, but could you, are there two quarterbacks in the NFL more different than Phillip Rivers and Tyrod Taylor? It's very funny that.
Yeah, it's sort of interesting. Yeah, it's interesting that there was a lure for Tyrod, or I guess for the Chargers to sign Tyrod last year.
He is not, yeah.
Yeah. I have a quick aside that's on Tua, if I could. I did, as you and I talked about before the podcast, I just came back from my honeymoon in Hawaii. It was really, really cool to see how many people are, you know, I couldn't help myself asking fans, you know, you'd see flags of various teams around the islands, et cetera.
But, on the street reporting.
Yeah. But just asking people like, you know, who's your squad?
That
island, that archipelago, is that what you call it when it's a multiple islands?
I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah. Whatever. We'll go with it.
The Hawaiian archipelago.
Yeah.
Feels right.
They are all in on wherever Tua plays.
Well, and really by the way, again, to go back to the Chargers and the business aspect of this, I think they would very much love for Hawaii to be a Chargers.
No question.
Same time zone-ish? No, not the same time zone, but closer. Yep. Certainly closer than Miami. I think it makes a lot of sense. I was thinking, but again, the Dolphins have assets, man. It's going to take a lot to jump them. That's why I'm so pumped for this draft. I was trying to think through field, like, what do the Chargers want to do on offense? Because they've had Phillip Rivers doesn't mean that's the kind of offense Anthony Lynn, who was Tyrod's coach, and
right,
that he wants. And then I was like, well, who's the Chargers offensive coordinator? And I will be straight up transparent. I did not know.
Oh, Shane Steichen. Yeah.
It's Shane Steichen. Yes. I pride myself on being fairly knowledgeable about these things. I had no freaking idea.
Yeah.
Now I know. Shane Steichen, 34 years old.
Yep.
And so he took over after Wiz was fired and he held on. They're keeping him. So I don't know what he likes. I don't know what identity they'd like to have on offense. So I don't think there's a lot to, you know, like read in the tea leaves there.
Sure.
They've got a reasonable cap situation, by the way. They could do a lot of different things.
No question. I mean, they have a ton of flexibility and, you know, I think they, I think that they, whether they actually use all that flexibility this offseason is another thing, Mina, but I think they have as many avenues to a quarterback resolution as basically anybody, almost anybody in the NFL. It's up there, I should say.
Whew, I'm so excited for the draft. Okay, so I'm going to read to you all the teams where I said I'm pretty sure I know what they're going to do, and tell me if you disagree. We'll keep it. We'll do kind of a lightning round. The Raiders, I think they keep Carr, who was actually low-key extremely good until he completely let me down at the end of the season after pumping him up. continues to frustrate me to no end because he's excellent at throwing deep balls and refuses to do so, and I don't know if it's ever going to change. I think they'll draft someone, and that's about it.
So what else has been, you know, so we've heard reports, right? I mean, the Brady rumors. I don't know if that Tom Brady is interested in them or if they are interested in him. I think Derek Carr for one more year is where the Raiders end up.
Broncos, I think they're rolled with Luck.
Yeah, I agree with you on that.
We can talk about him a little bit more.
Not in the quarterback market this offseason. Nope.
Not in the quarterback market. I think he showed some stuff at the end of the year. Also made some mistakes. But Bengals, Burrow, Titans, Tannehill. Now, I don't know what that'll look like exactly. But
yeah, I think the franchise tag is a good starting point for them.
Yeah.
And yes, Bengals, Burrow, by the way, personally not really, like, I'm sort of nonplussed by the comments we've seen.
Ooh, the Eli Manning.
Yeah, like, I think we're reading a lot. That will be a great example, and this applies to almost every quote, but I would have loved to see that quote in person, right? Like, I'd love to see what it looks like when he's saying it. How was it positioned? Was it, hey, you know, like, are we, you know, are we saying, hey, like, Joe, what do you think about the possibility of not playing for the Bengals? Did he put it that way, or was it, did it just sort of come unprompted? That's where I sort of, I was kind of make a, you know, I always feel like that's something that needs to be deciphered when you have a comment that can kind of sort of, that can really, can travel really far in a really short time.
Well, especially because, like, there's no drama with this pick, and, you know, people want there to be drama, and anything is going to be like throwing a match into that. Combine will be interesting. Washington, I think, is like Broncos, you know, going to roll with Haskins. I think, again, like the Broncos, I think he looked a lot better at the very end there. We'll see. Bucks, I was like, they're going to stick with Winston, but you just came up with that Teddy idea, and now my head is spinning. We'll see.
Yep.
I still kind of think you're going to stick with Winston, but I'm very intrigued by that idea.
Sure.
And then now we know Saints are New Orleans, and that's it, I think, right?
Yep. Yeah, I would say that's about correct. I mean, there's so many interesting hypotheticals here, Mina. In the reality, I would say one thing I think is really important to note is that there are a lot of quarterbacks that we have painted as possible, like, hey, here's where they would make sense. Not every quarterback's going to be happy at the end of this, right? So, for example, like, you know, not Teddy Bridgewater could find a fit. I know we discussed Tampa Bay earlier. Like, it's possible that Teddy Bridgewater, Andy Dalton, or Nick Foles, or some of these, Jameis Winston, some of these guys, or Phillip Rivers even, right? Like, when we did a roundtable, my guess for Phillip Rivers was retirement, right? Like, like, I think it's possible that some of these quarterbacks don't get what they want. There is rarely enough supply to meet the demand. This might be the year where there is close to more supply than demand among starting jobs.
Let's take a quick break. Between hitting the gym, eating cleaner, or learning a new skill, there are a lot of ways we can better ourselves in the new year. One of the most important, though, is to start the year off tackling high-interest credit card debt. And Upstart.com is here to help. Upstart is the revolutionary lending platform that offers smarter rates to help you pay off high-interest credit card debt. Upstart goes beyond the traditional credit score when assessing your credit worthiness. They actually reward you based on your education and job history in the form of a smarter rate. Upstart believes you're more than just your credit score. They believe in you. They make it fast, simple, and easy to check your rate. Since it's just a soft pull, it won't affect your credit score. The hard pull happens if you accept your rate. The best part? Once a loan is approved and accepted, most people get their funds the very next business day. The next day. Over 400,000 people have used Upstart to pay off credit cards or meet their financial goals. Free yourself from the burden of high-interest credit card debt by consolidating everything into one monthly payment with Upstart. See why Upstart is ranked number one in their category with over 300 businesses on Trustpilot. And hurry to upstart.com/Mina to find out how low your Upstart rate is. Checking your rate only takes a few minutes. That's upstart.com/Mina.
And now it's time for Dinks and Dunks. I'm getting paid for this, right?
As always, five questions, four from me, one from Lenny. First question, Field, who is your favorite XFL player and why is it Cardale Jones?
Oh, Duh, because he didn't go to college to play classes. I probably botched the quote.
No, but, you're close. He's the best tweeter.
Yeah, he's so good at the Twitter. Him. So good and fun to watch. And Mina, he'll be back in the NFL next year. I really believe
100%.
That.
Yeah, 100%. He's been so. Have you caught much XFL? I know you were.
Yes, you know, the great part about Hawaii is that everything's, you wake up and you're watching the XFL. It's like, hey, 9 a.m., roll out of bed. It's like, here's Diana Rossini talking to Cole Boozer right now. Like, hey, Cole, like, how many PBRs did you throw back? And I love the line of questions.
So,
it's great. Yeah.
My feeling, you know, I'll do more XFL on this pod at some point. There's basically three teams that are enjoyable to watch.
Okay, I agree with that. Yep.
DC, Houston, and St. Louis.
Yeah, I think I saw something like, two games so far have actually hit the over.
We've got breaking news!
I know where you're going with this. And I was going to wait and say nothing, but do you want to talk about it right now?
Question two. What do you make of the breaking news that Greg Olsen, incredible XFL analyst, by the way, also like such a good analyst. Dan Orlovsky gets so jealous when I talk about this. I think he's so awesome.
Yeah, he's great.
Greg Olsen is signing a one-year, $7 million deal, 5.5 guaranteed, with the Seattle Seahawks.
Yeah. First of all, just like totally with you on the analyst part. Like he's going to be
so good. He's so good.
He's going to be so good when he does that full time. Greg and I met. We were at the Super Bowl. I met him at the Super Bowl a couple weeks ago. And you know who else liked meeting Greg Olsen? My wife loved. Greg has moved up her tight end power rank. He's very fast. This off season, a guy that certainly not only is well spoken, but has a face for television as well, according to Chapin Yates. But moving on from that, a guy that there are 32 fits for Greg Olsen, right? I mean, obviously he moved on from Carolina, so I guess there's 31 fits, but he fits every team. The money is set and sensible, $7 million. That's about like that's a starting tight end who's good. It's a position where the Seahawks were able to get some pretty solid production out of unlikely sources this past year, Will Disley and then Jacob Hollister. But this would be, you know, this is the most, certainly the most accomplished tight end they've had, since, you know, Jimmy Graham at his sort of peak in Seattle. And a guy that I think will help them dramatically.
Yeah.
They need to, as much excitement as there was from some of the young players in that offense last year. Once Rashad Penny started to run well, Chris Carson was great last year, DK Metcalf was sweet, Tyler Lockett was, you know, he has his moments, but was, you know, really rock solid again for them. They needed to add a few more weapons, and this is a sensible one, and a guy that they can get ahead of free agency with, right? Because he was cut by the Panthers, he was eligible to sign right now.
Don't tell Mrs. Yates about the seventh floor crew.
Tell her about that.
Question number three. Wow, my head is spinning. I love it when Seahawks news breaks while I'm recording. I guess I'll say what I think. I like it too. Obviously they want to see if Disley can come back. It's just so heartbreaking because he's been such a great surprise, and to have another season ending injury 2 years in a row is awful. And we'll see, but that component, Hollister gave them some contributions, but they really, really, a tight end is so important to that offense also, I think. So I like it. I like it at that value.
Yep. I'm with you as well. Yeah. Really smart.
You just took some very long flights, Field. I think you might know where this is going. Pro or anti-recline?
Yeah, anti-recline for the most part. Was your caveat that, like, only on overnight flights?
Yes.
Yes. Because I did fly back overnight from Hawaii to Boston, and I found myself with – I was in one of those, like, extra legroom seats with the person behind me in the same situation, and – I did have a slight recline, not a full recline, but a slight recline, once it got to like the middle of the flight. And I was like at the point where I'm in and out of sleep, but like just alert enough to realize like, a couple inch recline would make me slightly more comfortable, but totally like during a regular flight, like I'm flying in Indianapolis next week for the combine, right? It's midday from Boston to Indianapolis. Not going to happen. No recline.
Great combine question, by the way. Like you really want to see if a guy's a good teammate?
There's a lot to learn about the client. No doubt. Yeah.
Question four, last one from me. This is a serious football question. Do you think the Chiefs can sign Chris Jones? I've been thinking about that a lot over the last 2 days, and I want to hear your take.
Yeah, I think they can. But I think that it's going to like they're going to have some difficult decisions to make this offseason, and like part of that, Mina, is that like you're really good, right? The margin for error decreases right away when it comes to once you have a quarterback at a massive number. And all right, no report. Our friend Brian Winters always says like, hey, you know, like aggregators alert. Like, this is not reporting. And I know that because I know in NBA, like, aggregation could be a little bit of a hairy thing for reporters. So, Clark Hunt, the Chiefs owner, made a comment that, like, basically said, like, you know, that we'll know the right time for Patrick Mahomes' extension. Doesn't necessarily have to get done this offseason. I think there's like a 90, it would seem logical, there's like a 99% chance that it does get done, Mina. But it's like, is it at least possible that like it doesn't get done? I don't know. I mean, they have been aggressive with some other contracts early in players' careers, Eric Fisher and Travis Kelce amongst them. But like, until that Patrick Mahomes deal is done, they technically have a bit more flexibility, but they're going to have to make some difficult decisions, the likes of which will include someone like Sammy Watkins, who will not be back at the current cap number of, I believe, $21 million next offseason. So I think, next season, I should say. I think it's possible they keep Chris Jones, but it will be at the cost of other players that at what point were viewed as part of their core.
It's tough for them because of the Frank Clark contract.
Yeah, yep.
It's challenging, and their needs in the secondary. I think they're actually in a really good they're in a really good place on offense, aside from obviously Mahomes financially. But it's tough, man. If how many teams have two guys on the defensive line with like gigantic contracts?
Yeah, it's rare.
It's pretty rare.
Yeah.
I kind of think they're going to try to do the D Ford thing again.
Yeah, tag and trade. Wouldn't be surprised.
Tag and trade.
Yeah.
And I think there'll be value for him.
Yep.
I also think if they just tag him, he might not play. I mean, strikes me as a real holdout contender.
And Mina, he just got that ring, right? Like,
yep.
It's a little bit different. Like, you've tasted one of the, you know, the fleeting things in football, and now, hey, second round pick, go get your money now, right? Like, I'm a Super Bowl champion for life, and I was a huge part of that run. Now let me go take care of mine, right? And in the same way that, imagine, if it was Patrick Mahomes who decided to hold out, you know what players would say? Respect it, man, like, you deserve your coin, right? So why should we view a defensive lineman as dramatically different? I understand the quarterback's the most important part of the roster. I'm not naive for that, and that Patrick Mahomes is the best quarterback in football, right? But
so great.
Yeah.
That's uncontroversial. Yeah. I love that we can all just say that. It's so nice.
Right. I know, right? It's so
simple. Sorry. Yeah. I don't know. It's tough.
So I think that, like, if a guy wants to go get his, like, I think we have to apply same standards, right? We can't just say, like, Chris Jones isn't selfish. Hold up. What are you doing, dude? Like, okay. Well, if this was somebody else on the roster, a.k.a. Patrick Mahomes, like, would we have that same feeling? So, it's an interesting thought.
He's homegrown. He's second round, and they paid Frank Clark. I mean,
yeah,
I don't hold anything against him. Final question, as always, is from Lenny. Lenny's a big fan of your Twitter account. Loved your tweet about Jameis Winston, the goodbye 30-30, hello 2020 when he got the LASIK. But he noticed it was on February 12th, and he wants to know how your wife felt about you tweeting jokes during your honeymoon and also apparently watching XFL football.
Yeah, so here's one of the great things. My wife is a content capturer herself, right? And she loves Instagram, and she was prolific in taking photos during our honeymoon. And actually that tweet came middle of the day, and we had just been on like an adventure that she had captured a ton of photos. So she was like looking through some of the shots that she had captured, and I was like, oh, this is like my chance to open up the Twitter, just see what's happening in the world of football, right? So I had a window to capture or to see what was happening while she was looking through all of her photos. So it kind of was like I was in a safe space. But it's
biding your time on your
Yeah, and you know, here's what I would say is that, like, well, ESPN doesn't require us to, you know, they don't require us to even be on Twitter or like tweet at a particular frequency. Like, here's the reality, Mina. Like, I would
don't
say,
use your job as an excuse.
No. Here's what I was going to say is that, like, you and I, like, I say, I really believe this. Like, you know, part of, like, it has been a huge conduit or like it has been a huge part of people sort of understanding and knowing us. And
listen,
you know, like that. So along those lines, like, the reality is it's going to be hard for me to ever fully disconnect, even, you know, like, I mean, fully entirely, like, put Twitter away for, you know, like, and just not like totally ignore it. You know what I mean?
The memes never sleep.